In Retrospection and Introspection, Mrs. Eddy says, quote, sin, that is the carnal mind, existed as a false claim before the human concept of sin was formed, close quote. That is, the carnal mind exists outside human consciousness, and it is only when human consciousness admits the carnal mind that the human concept of sin is formed. Now, the human concept of sin is matter, and the material universe with its sin, sickness, poverty, and death. So here we have as clear a statement as one could find to the effect that the carnal mind and the human consciousness are separate and distinct states of error. Sin, she says here, exists aside and distinct from human consciousness, your and my consciousness. When sin, or the carnal mind, is admitted to human consciousness, then that carnal mind is in turn objectified as the human concept, or matter. In this same article, in further proof that the carnal exists outside human consciousness, Mrs. Eddy goes on to say, quote, hence, one's concept of error is not the whole of error, close quote. That is, one's concept of error consists only of that which one admits into consciousness and no more. So, each individual concept of existence consists only of what one admits into consciousness. It is evident that each one of us admits different quantities of the carnal into consciousness, and that no one consciousness holds all of the carnal mind. Therefore, as Mrs. Eddy says, quote, one's concept of error is not all of error, close quote. Her further statement in this article on the human concept, that, quote, sin is both concrete and abstract, close quote, is only additional proof that the carnal mind becomes materialized only as it becomes active in individual human consciousness. The carnal mind exists in its abstract state, that is, without any physical evidence or tangibility, outside human consciousness. But just as soon as it is admitted to and becomes a part of the human consciousness, it becomes concrete. That is, it has evidence. It becomes material. It becomes tangible to human consciousness. Now, I am dwelling on this because it is an important point in the understanding of human existence and to your practice in Christian Science. Take the passage from Science and Health quoted above, where Mrs. Eddy says, quote, the human mind acts more powerfully to offset the discords of matter and the ills of the flesh in proportion as it, the human mind, puts less weight into the material or fleshly scale, that is, the carnal, and more weight into the spiritual scale. Close quote. Here is a direct recognition or statement regarding the three states of consciousness. She plainly says that the human mind puts less weight in the carnal mind and more weight in the divine mind. And again in Science and Health, Mrs. Eddy says, quote, the heavens and earth to one human consciousness, that consciousness which God bestows, that is, that consciousness which is animated solely by the divine mind, are spiritual, while to another, the unillumined human mind, that is, that mind which has not been imbued with the spiritual and is wholly carnal, the vision is material. Close quote. The textbook also states, quote, "We must learn how mankind govern the body. We should learn whether they govern the body through a belief in the necessity of sickness and death, sin and pardon, or govern it from the higher understanding that the divine mind makes perfect, acts upon the so-called human mind through truth, leads the human mind to relinquish all error, that is, the carnal mind, to find the divine mind to be the only mind and the healer of sin, disease, and death." Close quote. The marginal note to this paragraph reads, "Mortal mind's disappearance." You will note that mortal mind is not changed. It disappears. It is replaced in the human consciousness by the divine mind. In this connection, some years ago, I called your attention to the trial in Science and Health in the chapter on practice. This, to my sense, is one of the most important things in all of Mrs. Eddy's writings, and one which is the least understood. It brings out more clearly than anything else the fact that the carnal mind is separate and distinct from mortal man, and that the carnal mind's ideal man is a perfect physicality, free from sickness, etc. In this trial, mortal man is represented or depicted in his primitive state as a perfect physical concept, that is, perfect from the standpoint of materiality. Mortal man is here pictured as residing in mortal body. This mortal body is an object of consciousness. Consciousness constructs its own body. Human consciousness has admitted the beliefs of mortal mind. These beliefs of mortal mind are manifested, or objectified, as body, or the human body. The human body, without what Mrs. Eddy terms personal sense, is, to human sense, a perfect human body, free from sin and sickness and poverty and the like. Mortal man, under the supervision of the carnal mind, dwells in mortal body. Along come the arguments of personal sense, which the human consciousness admits, and these arguments of personal sense, admitted to human consciousness, and becoming a part of human consciousness, naturally, in turn, become a part of body, which is also a part of human consciousness. So one has the ability to choose whether or not he will admit these arguments of personal sense into consciousness, and thereby has the ability to decide whether or not he shall live in a sick human body or a well human body, an inharmonious human body or a harmonious human body. Human consciousness, according to the statements of truth which appear in this trial, first creates a body in which mortal man resides, or human consciousness resides, and then this human consciousness takes to its concept of body all the arguments of personal sense which produce sickness, poverty, unhappiness, etc. In the light of what we have learned about human consciousness, the human mind, the carnal mind and the divine mind. I wish you would study carefully this trial in the chapter on practice. It will unfold to you an entirely new outlook. It is really, to my sense, the summing up by Mrs. Eddy of all that she has been trying to convey to us in the previous pages of Science and Health. Study this part of Science and Health well. Dwell upon it. Ponder it. Digest it. And you will find therein a most precious and wonderful illustration. When we can fully perceive that all error, all evil, all that goes to make up material existence, all of the carnal mind, exists as one mind outside your and my individual consciousness, and that this mind, through its own thoughts, becomes a part of our individual existence only at our own will or volition. We then begin to see what a wonderful and powerful instrument for good we have with us always. That is, when we realize that everything that exists in our material world, everything that exists in our individual experience, all matter, all material phenomena, is simply the result of the carnal mind held in individual consciousness, and that we have the privilege and power to exclude that carnal mind from our consciousness and in place thereof put the divine mind, we begin to realize the wonderful opportunity which lies at the door of our thinking for bringing out good and peace and harmony in our everyday experiences. And in this understanding lies the explanation of how Christian Science heals the ills of matter, even though God knows nothing about matter or about the ills of matter. This seems to be a hard thing to understand. I used to think that it was an easy thing to explain understandingly, and that once explained, it would need no further explanation. But I find that it requires constant explanation, and even then, I discover that my explanations do not seem to always carry the clear and final word. But it is really simple. Here, we will say, by way of explanation, is a human consciousness. Now, without this human consciousness, or outside this human consciousness, there is no material world. Matter does not exist independently of your and my thinking. If everyone in the world stopped thinking materially, right then, material existence would cease. That is, right then, would matter cease to exist. Now, your material thinking does not create my material world, and my material thinking does not create your material world. In other words, the sum total of carnal thought does not go to make up a material world. It is not the sum total of carnal thought which goes to make matter. It is individual thought which creates matter, and therefore creation is individual and not collective. You and I, as I have explained before, are not born into a material world which has been created by the sum total of carnal thinking for ages. You and I create our own worlds by our own thinking. And so far as each individual consciousness is concerned, there is no material world outside individual consciousness. Those elements of the carnal mind called personal sense are, in turn, reflected as matter in the universe of matter which the individual consciousness is weaving about itself. And therefore, each individual consciousness creates its own environment and is responsible for its own world and its own experience. And inasmuch as each individual consciousness is responsible for its own world and its own individual experiences, each individual consciousness is likewise responsible for its own salvation from sin and sickness, in harmony, etc. The inharmony of each individual experience or existence exists in the mind of the individual. The carnal in your and my thinking enables us to see inharmony in others and in the world about us. You and I could not be conscious of sickness or sin or inharmony or floods or cyclones or drought except with the carnal in our thinking. These conditions do not exist in the divine mind or God. And therefore, to the extent that the divine takes the place of the carnal in your and my thinking, will these conditions cease to exist in our experience?